I noticed the note on the refrigerator door. Took Joseph to see a movie. Be back around 10:30. A glance at the clock told me it was only 9. They must have just left. Joseph was probably the last one out and forgot to lock the front door. No big deal. I stared into the refrigerator. Yogurt, chocolate milk, cucumbers, leftover lasagna. My head ached, reminding me of the 1,000 bobby pins my mother had stuck into my scalp. I grabbed a container of yogurt and a spoon, then made my way to my bedroom to change. But the second I entered the hallway, I froze. When I had left the house with Daniel, all of the family pictures had been hung on the left side of the wall, opposite 3 sets of French doors on the right. But now all of the pictures were on the right, and the French doors were on the left. The yogurt fell from my hands, spattering the wall. The spoon clattered to the floor, and the sound snapped me back into reality. I had a bad night. I was imagining things. I backed out of the hall, then ran to the kitchen and snatched a dish towel from the oven handle. When I went back to the hallway, everything would be where it should be. I went back to the hallway. Everything was where it should be. I hurried to my bedroom, closed the door behind me, and sank onto my bed. I was upset. I shouldn't have gone out. The party was not, in fact, what I needed. The whole thing was nervous-making and stressful and was probably causing a PTSD episode. I needed to relax. I needed to get out of these clothes. The heels went first. My feet were not used to that kind of torment, and once I slipped them off, my whole body sighed with relief. Everything was sore. My heels, calves, thighs. Still dressed, I padded to my bathroom and turned on the tub faucet. The hot water would unwind my muscles, unwind me. I flicked the heat lamp on, casting a womb-like reddish glow over the white tile and sink. The roar of water drowned out my thoughts, and I inhaled the steam curling up from the tub. I began to remove the bobby pins, and they collected there in the corner of my sink like skinny black caterpillars. I went to the closet to slip off my dress, but then I froze. An opened box sat on the closet floor. I had no memory of taking it down from the shelves, no memory of ripping the tape off the flaps and opening it since we'd moved. Did I leave it out? I must have. I kneeled in front of the box. It was the one my mother had brought to the hospital, and underneath bits of my old life, notes, drawings, books, the old cloth doll I've had since I was a baby, I found a stack of glossy pictures, carelessly bound by a rubber band. A few of them escaped, fluttering to the floor, and I picked one up. The photograph was from last summer. I saw the composition of that moment as if it was happening in real time. Rachel and I leaned our cheeks together as we faced the camera she held away from our faces. We were laughing, our mouths open, teeth glinting in the sun, the wind teasing the glowing strands of our hair. I heard the snap of her shutter creating an imprint on film, which she insisted on using that summer because she wanted to learn to develop it. Then the print went dark, leaving the two of us in a white, skeletal in the negative image. I placed the picture carefully on my empty desk, put the box back into my closet, and shut the door. When I noticed the silence, it stole the air from my lungs. I backed away from the closet and peered into the bathroom. The faucet was off. A single drop of water fell, sounding like a bomb in the stillness. The bathtub had overflowed, making the ceramic tile reflect the light like glass. I didn't remember turning the water off, but I must have. But there was still no way I was getting in. I could barely breathe as I grabbed 2 towels and threw them on the floor. They darkened as they absorbed the water and saturated in seconds. The water seeped through to my feet. The bathtub drain needed to be unplugged. I made my way over to it carefully, but everything inside me screamed, "Bad idea." I leaned over the edge. The emerald and diamond earrings glinted at the bottom. I raised my hands to my ears. Yep, gone. I heard my mother's voice in my mind. Don't lose them, okay? They were my mother's. I squeezed my eyes shut and tried to breathe. When I opened them, I would be brave. I tested the water with my finger. Nothing happened. Of course nothing happened. It was only a bathtub. The pictures had distracted me and I let it overflow, then turned it off without remembering it. Everything was fine. I plunged my arm in. For a second, I could not think. It was as if all feeling beneath my elbow had been cut off, like the rest of my arm never even existed. Then the scalding pain clawed at my skin, my bones, inside out, outside in. A soundless scream misshaped my mouth, and I struggled to pull my arm out, but it wouldn't move. I couldn't move. I crumpled against the side of the bathtub. My mother found me there an hour later.
How did you say it happened?
The ER doctor looked my age. He looped the gauze around my red, swollen skin of my forearm as I clenched my teeth, fighting off a scream. Bathtub, I managed to croak. He and my mother exchanged a glance.
Your arm must have been in there for some time, he said, meeting my eyes. These are some serious burns.
What could I say? That I tested the water before reaching in and it didn't seem that hot? That it felt like something grabbed me and held me under? I could see in the doctor's eyes that he thought I was crazy, that I did it on purpose. Anything I could say to explain what happened wouldn't help. So I looked away. I didn't remember much about the ride to the hospital except that Joseph and both my parents were with me. And thankfully, I didn't remember my mother picking me up off the bathroom floor or getting me in the car as she must have. I could barely look at her. When the doctor finished with my bandage, he pulled her into the hallway. I focused on the searing pain in my arm to avoid thinking about where I was. The antiseptic smell invaded my nostrils. The hospital air leached into my skin. I clenched my jaw against the nausea and leaned against the window to feel the cool glass on my cheek. My father must have been filling out paperwork, because Joseph sat and waited out there all alone. He looked so small and still. His eyes were downcast, and his face, God, his face was so scared. A hard ache rose in my throat. I had a glimpse of how terrified he must have been when I was in the hospital the last time, seeing his big sister swallowed up in a hospital bed. And now here we were again, not even 3 months later. It was a relief when my mother finally returned to lead me out of the room. We were all silent on the ride home. When we arrived back at the house, Daniel was there. He rounded on me when I walked in the door. Mara, are you okay? I nodded, just a burn. I want to talk to Mara for a bit, Daniel, my mother said. I'll come to your room in a while. Her voice was a threat, but Daniel looked unperturbed, more worried about me than anything else. My mother led the way down the hall to my bedroom and sat on my bed. I sat on my chair. I'm making an appointment for you to talk to someone tomorrow, she said. I nodded, as Joseph's terrified face appeared in my mind's eye. He was just a kid. I'd put him through enough. And between the burn, the mirrors, the laughter, the nightmares, maybe it was time to do things my mother's way. Maybe talking to someone would help. The doctor said you must have held your arm underwater for a long time to get second-degree burns. And you stayed there until I found you, she asked, her voice raw. What were you thinking, Mara? My voice was laced with defeat. Well, I was going to take a bath, but the earrings... I took a shaky breath. The earrings you lent me fell into the tub. I had to get them before I could unplug the drain.
Did you?
My mother asked. I shook my head. No. My voice cracked. My mother's eyebrows knit together. She walked over to me and put her hand on my earlobe. I felt her finger unhook the back of an earring. She held the emerald and diamond stud in her flat palm. I lifted my hand to the other ear. That one was in too. I removed the earring and placed it in her hand as tears welled in my eyes. I'd imagined the whole thing. Chapter 22
Mara Dyer? The receptionist called out. I shot up. The magazine I'd been not reading fell to the floor, open to an NC-17 photograph of two naked models straddling a handsomely suited actor. Rather racy for a psychiatrist's office. I picked up the magazine and set it on the coffee table, then walked over to the door the smiling receptionist was pointing at. I went in. The psychiatrist took off her glasses and set them on her desk as she rose. Mara, it's nice to meet you. I'm Rebecca Millard. We shook hands. I stared at the seating options. An armchair. The obligatory couch. A desk chair. Probably some kind of test. I chose the armchair. Dr. Millard smiled and crossed her legs. She was thin. My mother's age. Maybe they even knew each other. So what brings you here today, Mara? She asked. I held up my bandaged arm. Dr. Millard raised her eyebrows, waiting for me to speak, so I did. I burned myself. Do you mean you were burned, or you burned yourself? She was quick, this one. I was burned, but my mother thinks I burned myself. How did it happen? I took a deep breath and told her about the earrings and the bathtub, but not the unlocked front door, or the box in my closet that I didn't remember taking down. One thing at a time. Has anything like that happened before? Like what? I scanned the books on her shelves. The diagnostic manual, pharmacological volumes, journals. Nothing interesting or unusual. It could have been anyone's office. There was no personality. Dr. Millard paused before answering. Was last night the first time you've been in the hospital? I narrowed my eyes at her. She sounded more like a lawyer than a psychiatrist. Why ask if you already know the answer? I don't already know the answer, Dr. Millar said, unruffled. My mother didn't tell you? She told me you moved here recently because you experienced a trauma back in Rhode Island, but I didn't get a chance to speak with her for very long. I had to switch one of my other patients to see you on such short notice. I'm sorry, I said. Dr. Millard furrowed her eyebrows. There's nothing to be sorry for, Mara. I just hope I can help. I hoped so, too, but I was starting to doubt it. What do you have in mind? Well, you can start by telling me if you've ever been in the hospital before, she said, clasping her hands in her lap. I nodded. What for? She looked at me with only casual interest. She wrote nothing down. My friends died in an accident, my best friend. I was there, but I wasn't hurt. She looked confused. Why were you in the hospital then? I was unconscious for 3 days. My mouth didn't seem to want to form the word coma. Your friends, she said slowly. How did they die? I tried to answer her, to repeat what my mother had told me, but had trouble with the words. They were buried in my throat, just beyond my reach. The silence grew more and more awkward as I struggled to pull them out. Dr. Millard leaned in. It's okay, Mara, she said. You don't have to tell me. I took a deep breath. I don't remember how they died, honestly. She nodded her head. A strand of dark blonde hair fell over her forehead. Okay. Okay. I shot her a skeptical look. Just like that? Dr. Millard smiled softly, her brown eyes kind. Just like that. We don't have to talk about anything you don't want to talk about in this room. I bristled a bit. Well, I don't mind talking about it, I just don't remember. And that's okay. Sometimes the mind has a way of protecting us from things until we're ready to deal with them. Her assumption bothered me, more than it should have. I feel ready to deal with it. She tucked her hair behind her ear. And that's fine, too. When did all of this happen? I thought for a minute. It was so hard to keep track of time. A few months ago? December? For the first time, Dr. Millard's demeanor changed. She seemed surprised. Well, that's pretty recent. I shrugged and looked away. My eyes fell on a plastic-looking plant in the corner of the room that had caught the sunlight. I wondered if it was real. So, how have you been doing since the move? A slight smile twitched at the corner of my mouth. Aside from the burn, you mean? Dr. Millard grinned back. Aside from that. The conversation could play out 100 different ways. Dr. Millard was being paid to listen to me. It was her job. Just a job. When she went home to her family, she wouldn't be Dr. Millard. She'd be a mom. Becca, maybe. Someone else, just like my mother. And she wouldn't think about me until I saw her next. But I was there for a reason. The flashbacks, the dreams, I could handle. The hallucinations, I could deal with. But the burn upped the ante. I thought of Joseph, looking so scared and small and lost in the hospital. I never wanted to see him look that way again. I swallowed hard and went for it. I think something's happening to me. My grand declaration. Her expression didn't change. What do you think is happening to you? I don't know. I felt the urge to sigh and rake my hands through my hair, but resisted. I didn't know what kind of signal it would send, and didn't want to send the wrong one. All right, let's back up for a minute. Why do you think something is happening to you? What makes you think that? I struggled to maintain eye contact with her. Sometimes I see things that aren't there. What kind of things? Where to begin? I decided to go in reverse chronological order. Well, like I told you, I thought the earrings my mother lent me fell in the bathtub, but they were in my ears. Dr. Millar nodded. Go on. And before I went to the party last night, I saw one of my dead friends in the mirror. Zing.
What kind of party was it?
If Dr. Millard was shocked by my revelation, she didn't show it. A costume party? I didn't mean for it to sound like a question.
Did you go with anyone?
I nodded. My brother, but he was meeting someone else. The room started to feel warm.
So you were alone?
An image of Noah whispering to the fairy girl flashed before my eyes. Alone indeed.
Yes.
Have you gone out much since you moved? I shook my head. Last night was the first time. Dr. Millard smiled slightly. Sounds like it could be stressful. At that, I snorted.
Couldn't help it. Compared to what?
Her eyebrows lifted. You tell me.
Compared to having your best friend die?
Or moving away from everyone you've ever known?
Or starting a new school so late in the year?
Or finding out your father is representing an alleged murderer of a teenage girl? The thought appeared in my mind without warning, without precedent. I pushed it away. Dad's work was not going to be a problem for me. I couldn't let myself be that damaged. If my mother noticed me stressing about it, she might make him drop the case. His first one since we moved. And with three kids in private school now, they probably needed the money. I'd screwed up their lives enough already. I decided not to mention it to Dr. Millard. What we said was confidential, but still. Her face was serious when she spoke. You're right, she said, shifting back in her chair. Let me ask you this. Was last night the first time you saw something, or someone, that wasn't there? I shook my head, somewhat relieved that the focus of the conversation had shifted. Do you feel comfortable telling me about the other things you've seen?
Not particularly. I picked idly at the thread in my worn jeans, knowing how crazy I would sound. How crazy I already sounded. I said it anyway.
I saw my old boyfriend, Jude, at school once.
When?
My first day.
After I saw my algebra classroom collapse. After Claire first appeared in the mirror.
I bit my lip.
So you were already pretty stressed out.
I nodded. Do you miss him?
Her question caught me off guard. How did I answer that?
When I was awake, I barely thought about Jude. And when I dreamed, it wasn't exactly pleasant. I lowered my eyes, hoping Dr. Millard wouldn't notice my burning face, the only evidence of my shame. I was a bad person.
Sometimes these things are complicated, Mara, she said. Guess she noticed after all. When we lose people who are important to us, there's a whole range of emotions we might experience.
I shifted in my seat. Can we talk about something else?
We can, but I'd really like to stay with this for a little while. Can you tell me a little bit about your relationship?
I closed my eyes. It wasn't much of one. We were only together for a couple of months.
Was it a good couple of months?
I thought about it.
Okay, Dr. Millar said, moving on. The answer must have been written all over my face. How was your relationship with your best friend? You saw her since she died too, right?
I shook my head. That was Claire. She only moved to Laurelton last year. She was Jude, my boyfriend's sister. She was close with Rachel.
Dr. Millard's eyes narrowed. Rachel? Your best friend?
I nodded.
But she wasn't close with you?
Not so much.
And you haven't seen Rachel?
I shook my head.
Is there anything else? Anything you've seen that you shouldn't have? Anything you've heard that you shouldn't have?
My eyes narrowed.
Like voices?
She definitely thought I was crazy.
She shrugged. Like anything.
I looked at my lap and tried to stifle a yawn. I failed.
Sometimes,
I hear my name being called. Dr. Millar nodded.
How do you sleep?
Not so great, I admitted.
Nightmares?
You could call them that.
Yes.
Do you remember any of them?
I rubbed the back of my neck.
Sometimes.
Sometimes I dream about that night.
I think you're pretty brave to be telling me all this.
She didn't sound patronizing when she said it.
I don't want to be crazy, I told her, truthfully.
I don't think you're crazy.
So it's normal to see things that aren't there?
When someone's been through a traumatic event, yes.
Even though I don't remember it?
Dr. Millar raised an eyebrow.
Any of it? I rubbed my forehead, then pulled the hair off the back of my neck into a knot. I said nothing.
I think you are starting to remember it, she said.
Slowly, and in a way that it doesn't hurt your mind too much to process. And even though I want to explore this more if you decide to see me again, I think it's possible that you seeing Jude and Claire could be your mind's way of expressing the unresolved feelings you have about them.
So what do I do to make it stop? I asked her.
Well, If you think you'd like to see me again, we can talk about making a plan for therapy.
No drugs?
I figured my mother had taken me to a psychiatrist for a reason. Probably figured she needed to bring out the big guns. And after last night, I couldn't exactly argue with her.
Well, I do usually prescribe medication to be used in conjunction with therapy, but it's your choice. I can recommend you to a psychologist if you don't want to pursue medication just yet, or we can give it a try, see how you do.
The things that had been happening since we moved, the dreams, the hallucinations, I wondered if a pill could really make it go away. Do you think it will help?
On its own? Maybe.
But with cognitive behavioral therapy, chances are higher that you'd feel better sooner, although it's definitely a long-term process.
Cognitive behavioral therapy?
Dr. Millard nodded. It changes your way of thinking about things, how to deal with what you've been seeing, what you're feeling. It will also help with the nightmares you've been having.
The memories? I corrected her.
And then a thought materialized. What if I just need to remember?
She leaned forward in her chair slightly.
That could be part of it, Mara, but it's not something you can force. Your mind is already working on it in its own way.
A smile tugged at the corner of my mouth. So we won't be doing any hypnotherapy or anything here? Dr. Millard grinned.
I'm afraid not, she said.
I nodded. My mother doesn't believe in it either.
Dr. Millard took a pad off her desk and wrote something on it. She tore a piece of paper off and handed it to me. Have your mother fill this. If you want to take it, great. If not, that's okay, too. It might not kick in for a few weeks, though, or it might kick in a few days after you start. Everyone's different.
I couldn't read Dr. Millard's handwriting. Zoloft? She shook her head.
I don't like to prescribe SSRIs for teenagers.
How come?
Dr. Millard's eyes scanned the calendar on her desk. There have been some studies that show a link between SSRIs and suicide in adolescents. Can you meet next Thursday?
The dates flew by in my mind. Actually, I have exams coming up, huge chunk of my grade.
Well, that's a lot of pressure. I barked out a laugh.
Yeah, I guess so.
She picked up her glasses and put them back on. Mara, have you ever thought about taking some time off from school?
I stood up. Well, so I can sit around and think about how much I miss Rachel all day? Screw up my chance to graduate on time? Ruin my transcripts?
Point taken. Dr. Millard smiled and stood. She extended her hand, and I shook it, but couldn't meet her eyes. I was too embarrassed by my impromptu pity party.
Try to watch the stress, though, she said, then shrugged. As much as you can. PTSD episodes tend to be triggered by moments of it. And call me when exams are over, especially if you decide to start taking the medication, or before, if you need me. She handed me her card.
It was nice to meet you, Mara. I'm glad you came in.
Thanks, I said, and meant it.
My mother was waiting for me outside when the appointment ended. Surprisingly, she didn't pry. I handed her the prescription and her face tensed.
What's wrong? I asked her.
Nothing, she said, and faced the road. We stopped at a pharmacy on the way home. She placed the bag in the center console. I opened it and looked at the pill bottle.
Zyprexa, I read out loud. What is it?
It should help make things a little easier to deal with, my mother said, still staring ahead.
A non-answer. She said nothing else on the way home.
My mother took the bag into house with her, and I went to my room. I turned on my computer and typed Zyprexa into Google. I clicked on the first website I found, and my mouth went dry. It was an antipsychotic.
Chapter 23.
I didn't know how to react to Noah in class the next day. The costume party seemed like a lifetime ago, but my humiliation was fresh. I was grateful for the long-sleeved dress shirt I had to wear. It minimized the impact of the bandage on my left arm, at least. My mother had become the keeper of the pills, and she doled out the Tylenol with codeine before I left that morning. I ached all over, but I didn't take it. I didn't plan on starting the Zyprexa just yet, either. I needed a clear head. When I walked into English, Noah was already there. Our eyes met for a second before I dropped my gaze and walked past him. I had to find out about Mabel. Was it only a week since I'd taken her? And figure out how to spring her on my parents now, considering what had happened. But I didn't know how to bring it up to Noah, how to talk to him after the party. I sat down at a desk on the other side of the room, but he stood and followed me, sitting behind my chair. As Miss Lee began her lecture, I found myself tapping my pencil on my desk.
Noah cracked his knuckles behind me, setting my teeth on edge. When the bell rang, I threaded through the students, eager for algebra for the first time in my life. Noah drove girls crazy, and I was already crazy. I needed to let it go, let him go. As Jamie had so astutely said, I had enough problems. I was so relieved to see Jamie in algebra that I might have actually smiled, with teeth. But the glimmer of my good mood didn't last. Noah caught up with me as soon as the bell rang. "Hey," he said, as he fell into a graceful lope beside me. "Hey." I gave him the stare ahead. "Ask about the dog. Ask about the dog." I tried to find the words but clenched my teeth instead. "Mabel isn't doing so well," Noah said, his voice even. My stomach dropped, and I slowed my pace by a fraction. "Is she going to be okay?" "Think so, but it's probably better if she stays with us for a while, so my mother can care for her," he said, as he ran his hand over the back of his neck. "Do you mind?" "No," I said, shifting the weight of my bag on my shoulder as I approached my next class. "That's probably the best thing." "I wanted to ask." Noah started, then lifted a hand to his hair, twisting the strands. "My mother wanted to know if maybe we could keep her. She's gotten attached." I tilted my head sideways to see him. He either didn't notice my bandaged hand or was ignoring it. He seemed indifferent to everything, remote. His words didn't match his tone. "I mean, she's your dog," he said. "Whatever you want will do. It's okay." I cut him off. I remembered the way Mabel had curled into his chest as he carried her. She'd be better off with him, definitely. "Tell your mom," I said, "it's fine." "I was going to ask you when I saw you at the party, but you left." "I had somewhere else to be," I said, avoiding his eyes. "Right. What's wrong?" he asked, still sounding utterly disinterested. "Nothing," I said. "I don't believe you." "I don't care." "Not true." "All right, have lunch with me then," he said casually. I paused, torn between yes and no. "No," I said finally. "Why not?" "I have a study date," I said. Hopefully Jamie would oblige.
"With who?"
"Why do you care?" I asked with an edge. We could have been discussing molecular physics for all the interest he seemed to be paying to the conversation.
"I'm starting to wonder that myself," Noah said and walked away. He didn't look back.
"Fine." I drew my bandaged hand in art, even though we were supposed to be working on faces. And when lunch arrived, I didn't look for Jamie, choosing solitude instead. I withdrew the banana I brought, peeled it, and took a slow bite as I wandered to my locker, letting my teeth graze against the flesh. I was glad to be free of Noah, relieved even, as I went to exchange my books, until I saw the note. Folded so that it fit through the slats of my locker, innocently perched on a tower of my books. A thick piece of paper with my name on it. Acid-free, bright white paper. Sketchbook paper. I unfolded the note and recognized one of my drawings of Noah immediately. The other side simply said, "I have something that belongs to you. Meet at the vending machines at lunch if you want it back." A rush of heat ignited my skin. Did Noah steal my sketchbook? My sudden fury surprised me. I'd never punched anyone before, but there was a first time for everything. I punctuated the thought with a ringing metallic slam of my locker door. I don't remember how I got to the bottom of the stairs. One minute I was by my locker, and the next minute I was rounding the corner by the vending machines. And then a horrible thought occurred to me. What if it wasn't Noah? What if it was someone else? Like, oh no, like Anna. I imagined her dissolving into a fit of giggles as she showed my sketches of Noah to her friends. Sure enough, when I arrived, Anna stood waiting with a smug, satisfied sneer on her generically pretty face. Flanked by Aiden, they blocked my way, dripping with gloat. When I saw them there, I was still confident I could handle it. I'd almost come to expect her bullshit. What I didn't expect were the dozens of students assembled to watch this train wreck unfold. And what sent a piercing scream through my spine was the sight of Noah, centered in a halo of admirers, male and female. At that moment, the magnitude of Anna's machinations insulted my mind. My stomach turned as it all snapped into place. Why everyone was there? Why Noah was there? Anna had been constructing this three-ring circus since Noah first spoke to me on day one. It was her black Mercedes I almost hit last week. She saw me get out of Noah's car. And now, all she needed to complete her ringmaster role was a top hat and a monocle. Oh, Anna, I underestimated you. All eyes were on me. My move, if I played. My eyes scanned the assembled students as I stood there, debating. Finally, I simply looked at Anna and dared her to speak. She who speaks first loses. She didn't disappoint.
"Looking for this?"
she chirped innocently as she held up my sketchbook. I reached for it, but she snatched it away. "You crotch pheasant," I said through gritted teeth. Anna feigned shock.
"My, my, Mara, what language! I'm simply returning a lost item to its rightful owner."
"You are the rightful owner, aren't you?" she asked as she flipped the sketchbook open to the inside cover.
"Mara Dyer," she read loudly. "That's you," she added with emphasis, punctuating the declaration with a sneer.
I said nothing.
"Aiden here was nice enough to pick it up when you left it in algebra by mistake."
Aiden smiled on cue. He must have snatched it from my bag. Actually, he stole it.
"I'm afraid not, Mara. You must have carelessly misplaced it," she said and tisked.
Now that she had set the stage, Anna began to flip through my sketchbook. If I hit her, Aiden would snatch the sketchbook and Noah would still see what I'd drawn. And let's be honest, I've never hit anyone in my life. There would be nothing I could say to minimize the damage either. The sketches were so accurate, snapshots of him so adoringly rendered, that they'd betray my obsessive infatuation the second they were revealed. The humiliation would be perfect, and she knew it. Defeat bloomed in my cheeks, staining my throat and my collarbone. I could do nothing but suffer through the emotional skinning and stand there, flayed before the entire school until Anna was drunk on her overdose of cruelty, and collect my sketchbook when she was finished, because it was mine, and I would get it back. I didn't want to see Noah's face when Anna finally turned to the page where he made his first appearance. Seeing him smirk or smile or laugh or roll his eyes would undo me, and I could not cry here today. So I fixed my stare on Anna's face and watched her tremble with gleeful malice as she held the sketchbook and made her way over to him. The crowd shifted from a rough semicircle into a wedge, with Noah at the point.
"Noah?" she cooed.
"Anna," he replied flatly. She flipped from page to page, and I could hear the whispers rise into a murmur, and could hear a ringing laugh somewhere from the far side of the tiki hut, but it died down. Anna turned the pages slowly for effect, and like some demonic schoolmarm, held the book at an angle to provide maximum exposure to the assembled crowd. Everyone needed to have the opportunity to catch a long and glorious glimpse of my disgrace.
"This looks so much like you," she said to Noah, pressing her body against his.
"My girl is talented," Noah said. My heart stopped beating. Anna's heart stopped beating. Everyone's heart stopped beating. The buzzing of a solitary gnat would have sounded obscene in the stillness.
"Bullshit,"
Anna whispered finally, but it was loud enough for everyone to hear. She hadn't moved an inch. Noah shrugged.
"I'm a vain bastard, and Mara indulges me."
After a pause, he added,
"I'm just glad you didn't get your greedy little claws on the other sketchbook. That would have been embarrassing."
His lips curved into a sly smile as he slid from the picnic table he'd been sitting on.
"Now get the fuck off me," he said calmly to a dumbfounded, speechless Anna as he pushed past her, plucking the sketchbook roughly from her hands, and walked over to me.
"Let's go," Noah ordered gently once he was at my side. His body brushed the line of my shoulder and arm protectively, and then he held out his hand. I wanted to take it, and I wanted to spit in Anna's face, and I wanted to kiss him, and I wanted to knee Aiden Davis in the groin. Civilization won out, and I willed each individual nerve to respond to the signal I sent with my brain and placed my fingers in his. A current traveled from my fingertips through to the hollow where my stomach used to be. And just like that, I was completely, utterly, and entirely his. Neither of us spoke until we were out of earshot and out of sight of the shocked and awed student body. We were standing next to a bench by the basketball court when Noah stopped, finally letting go of my hand. It felt empty, but I barely had time to process the loss.
"Are you all right?"
he asked softly. I nodded, staring past him. My tongue felt numb.
"Are you sure?"
I nodded again.
"Are you positive?"
I glared at him. "I'm fine," I said. "That's my girl."
"I'm not your girl,"
I said, with more venom than I intended.
"Right then," Noah said, and looked at me with a curious stare.
He raised an eyebrow. About that. I didn't know what to say, so I said nothing.
You like me, he finally said. You like me.
He was trying not to smile.
No, I hate you, I said, hoping that saying it would make it so. And yet you draw me.
Noah was still smug, completely undeterred by my declaration.
This was torture. Worse somehow than what just happened, even though it was only the two of us, or because it was only the two of us.
Why?
He asked.
Why what?
What could I say? Noah, despite you being an asshole, or maybe because of it, I'd like to rip off your clothes and have your babies.
Don't tell.
Why everything?
He continued.
Start with why you hate me, and then continue until you get to the part about the drawings.
I don't really hate you, I said in defeat.
I know.
Then why are you asking?
Because I wanted you to admit it,
he said, grinning crookedly.
Done,
I said, feeling hopeless.
Are we finished?
You're the most ungrateful person alive, he mused.
You're right, I said, my voice flat. Thanks for the save. I should go. I started to walk away.
Not so fast.
Noah reached for my good wrist. He took it gently, and I turned around. My heart was sickeningly aflutter.
We still have a problem.
I looked at him, uncomprehending. He was still holding my wrist, and the contact interfered with my cerebral functioning.
Everyone thinks we're together, Noah said.
Oh, Noah needed a way out.
Of course he did.
We weren't, in fact, together. I was just... I don't know what I was to him. I looked at the ground, digging the toe of my sneaker into the paved walkway like a sullen child while I thought about what to say.
Tell your friends you dumped me on Monday, I said finally.
Noah let go of my wrist and looked genuinely confused.
What?
If you tell them that you broke up with me over the weekend, everyone will forget about this eventually. Tell them that I was too needy or something, I said. Noah arched his eyebrows slightly. That wasn't exactly what I had in mind.
Fine, I said, confused myself. I'll go along with whatever you want, okay?
Sunday.
Excuse me?
I want Sunday. My parents are having a thing on Saturday, but Sunday I'm free.
I didn't understand. And?
And you're going to spend the day with me.
That's not what I expected.
I am?
Yes, you owe me,
he said, and he was right, I did.
Noah wouldn't have had to do anything to make Anna's dream and my nightmare come true.
He could have sat there and shrugged and stared, and it would have been enough to perfect my school-wide humiliation. But he didn't. He saved me, and I could not fathom why.
Is there any point asking what you're going to make me do on Sunday?
Not really.
Okay.
Is there any point asking what you're going to do to me?
He grinned wickedly.
Not really.
Fabulous.
Does it involve the use of a safe word?
That will depend entirely on you.
Noah moved impossibly closer, just inches away. A few freckles disappeared into the scruff on his jaw.
I'll be gentle, Noah added.
My breath caught in my throat as he looked at me from beneath those lashes, ruining me. I narrowed my eyes at him.
You're evil.
In response, Noah smiled and raised his finger to gently tap the tip of my nose.
And you're mine,
he said, then walked away.
Chapter 24. After school, I found Daniel waiting for me at the back gate. He shifted his overloaded backpack to his other shoulder.
Well, well, if it isn't the talk of the town.
News travels fast around these parts, I asked. But as I did, I noticed quite a bit of staring from other Croydon students as we made our way to his car.
On the contrary, dear sister, I didn't hear about the showdown at Tiki Corral until a half an hour after it ended, he said. As we reached the car,
are we going to talk about it?
I barked out a laugh as I pulled my car door open and ducked inside.
No.
Daniel followed in less than a second.
Noah Shaw, huh?
I said no.
When did that happen?
No means no.
You don't actually think you're going to be allowed out of the house with this guy without my help, do you?
Still no.
Daniel pulled out of the parking lot.
Something tells me you'll come around, he said, and smiled at the road in front of us the whole way home. So annoying.
When he pulled into the driveway, I shot out of the passenger seat.
almost missing the fact that our younger brother was crouched over the bushes that separated our house from the neighboring property. Daniel was already inside. I made my way over to Joseph. As of yesterday, he'd seem fine. Like the hospital never happened. I wanted to make sure it stayed that way. "Hey," I said as I walked up to him. "What's..." A black cat he'd been petting slit its yellow eyes and hissed at me. I took a step back. Joseph withdrew his hand in turn, still crouched. "You're scaring her." I raised my hands defensively. "Sorry. You coming inside?" The cat issued a low meow and then darted away. My brother stood and wiped his hands on his shirt. "I am now." Once in the house, I dropped my bag by the front table, ignoring the crunch of some unidentifiable object inside the canvas, and strolled into the kitchen. The phone rang. Joseph darted to pick it up. "Dyer residence," he answered formally. "Hold, please," he said as he covered the mouthpiece. He really was hilarious. "It's for you, Mara," he said. "And it's a boy," he sing-songed. I rolled my eyes but wondered who it could be. "I'm taking it in my room," I said as Joseph erupted in giggles. Horrible. Out of his field of vision, I jogged the rest of the way and lifted my phone. "Hello?"
"Hello,"
Noah answered, mimicking my American accent. But I'd know that voice anywhere. "How did you get my phone number?" I blurted before I could stop myself.
"It's cold research."
I could hear him smirking over the phone. "Or stalking?" Noah chuckled.
"You're adorable when you're bitchy."
"You're not," I said, but smiled despite myself.
"What time shall I pick you up on Sunday, and where exactly do you live?"
Noah meeting my family could not happen. I would never hear the end of it. "You don't have to pick me up," I said in a rush.
"Considering you have no idea where we're going, and I have no intention of telling you, I'm quite sure that I do. I can meet you somewhere centrally located."
Noah sounded amused.
"I promise to press my trousers before meeting your family. I'll even bring flowers for the occasion."
"Oh, God, please don't," I said. "Maybe honesty would be the best policy. My family is going to screw with my life if you come over." I knew them far too well.
"Congratulations. You just made the prospect all the more enticing. What's your address?"
"I hate you more than you can know."
"Give it up, Mara. You know I'll find it anyway."
I sighed, defeated, and gave it to him.
"I'll be there at 10.
"Oh," I said, surprised. For some reason, I thought this was a day thing.
"Hilarious. 10 in the morning, darling."
"Can't a girl sleep in on the weekend?"
"You don't sleep. See you Sunday, and don't wear stupid shoes," Noah said and hung up before I could reply.
I stood, staring at the phone.
He was so aggravating, but a nervous thrill traveled through my stomach. Me and Noah, Sunday. Just us.
My mother poked her head into my room and spoke, startling me. "Dad's going to be home for dinner tonight. Can you help set the table, or does your arm hurt too much?" My arm. My mother. Would she still let me go? "Be right there," I said, putting down the phone. Seems I'd need Daniel's help after all. I walked down the hallway and slipped into his room. He was on his bed, reading a book. "Hi," I said. "Hi." He didn't look up. "So I need your help."
"With what, pray tell?"
He was going to make this as difficult as possible. Awesome. "I'm supposed to go out with Noah on Sunday." He laughed. "Glad I amuse you."
"I'm sorry, I'm impressed. God, Daniel, am I really that hideous?" "Oh, come on, that's not what I meant. I'm impressed that you actually agreed to go out, that's all."
I sulked and raised my arm. I don't think Mom is ever going to let me out of her sight again. At this, Daniel finally looked at me and raised an eyebrow. "She was supremely pissed Wednesday night, but now that you're, you know, talking to someone, I could work some magic, I think." His grin spread. "If you spilled the proverbial beans, that is." If anyone could work our mother, it was Daniel. "Fine. What? Did you know it was coming?" "My sketchbook went missing on Wednesday." "Nice try. How about the part where Shaw declared to practically the entire school that you'd been using him to practice your nudes?" I sighed. Complete surprise.
"That's what I thought when I heard it. I mean, really, you've barely left the house."
He trailed off, but I heard the things he didn't say. "You've barely left the house except to run away from a party, to visit the emergency room, to visit a psychiatrist." I interrupted the awkward silence. "So, are you going to help me or not?"
Daniel tilted his head sideways and smiled.
You like him?
This was unbearable. You know what? Forget it. I turned to leave. Daniel sat up. All right, I'll help you. But only out of guilt. He made his way over to me. I should have told you about Dad's case. Well, consider us even then, I said, then smiled. If you help me set the table. So, what's the special occasion? I asked my father at dinner that night. He gave me a questioning look. It's like the third time you've been home this early since we moved. Ah, he said, and smiled. Well, it was a good day at the office. He took a bite of curried chicken, then swallowed. Turns out my client's the real deal. The so-called eyewitness is 100 years old. She is not going to hold up on cross. My mother stood to retrieve more food from the kitchen. That's lovely, Marcus, she said, watching me. I kept my face carefully composed. Well, what do you want me to say? Lassiter has an alibi. He has roots in the community. He's one of the most well-respected land developers in South Florida. He's given hundreds of thousands of dollars to conservancy groups. Is that, like, oxymoronic? Joseph chimed in. Daniel grinned at our little brother and then piped up. I think Joseph's right. Maybe that's all just pretense. I mean, he's a developer and he's donating to the groups who hate him. It's obviously just for show. Probably bought him goodwill at his bail hearing. I decided to join in, to keep up appearances. I agree. Sounds like he has something to hide. I sounded suitably jovial. My mother even gave me a thumbs up from the kitchen. Mission accomplished. All right, my father said. I know when I'm being ganged up on, but it's not very funny, guys. The man's on trial for murder, and the evidence doesn't add up. But, Dad, isn't that your job to say that? Knock it off, Joseph. You tell him, Dad, Daniel said to our father. When my dad's back was turned, Daniel winked at our little brother. What I'd like to know, my mother said as my father opened his mouth to retort, is where my eldest son will be attending college next year. And then Daniel was in the spotlight. He reported on the college acceptances he expected, and I tuned him out while shoveling some basmati rice onto my plate. I'd already taken a bite when I noticed something fall through the prongs of my fork. Something small, something pale, something moving. I froze mid-chew as my gaze slid over my plate. White maggots writhed on the porcelain half-drowned in curry. I covered my mouth. You okay? Daniel asked, then ate a forkful of rice. I looked at him wide-eyed with my mouth still full, and then back down at my food. No maggots, just rice. But I couldn't bring myself to swallow. I got up from the table and walked slowly to the hallway. Once I turned the corner, I raced to the guest bathroom and spit out the food. My knees trembled and my body felt clammy. I splashed cold water over my pale, sweaty face and looked in the mirror out of habit. Jude stood behind me, wearing the same clothes he had on the night I saw him, and a smile that was completely devoid of warmth. I couldn't breathe. "You need to take your mind off this place," he said, before I turned to the toilet and threw up. Chapter 25 My alarm shocked me awake Sunday morning. I hadn't remembered falling asleep at all. I was still in the clothes I was wearing the day before. I was just tired, and maybe a little nervous about meeting Noah today. Maybe, a little. I was focused on my closet and surveyed my options. Skirt? No. Dress? Definitely not. Jeans it would be then. I pulled on a destroyed pair and snatched a favorite t-shirt from my dresser drawer, yanking it over my head. My heart beat wildly in sharp contrast to the sluggish movement of every other body part as I made my way to the kitchen that morning, as if everything was normal, because it was. My mother was putting slices of bread in the toaster when I walked in. "Morning, Mom," my voice was so even. I gave myself an internal round of applause. "Good morning, honey," she smiled and pulled out a filter for the coffee pot. "You're up early." She tucked a strand of her short hair behind her ear. Yes, I was. And she didn't know why. Since Wednesday, I'd been trying to think of a way to mention today's non-plans to her, but my mind kept blanking. And now, he was almost here. Got any plans today? Go time. Yeah, actually. Keep it casual. No big deal. What are you up to? She rummaged through the cabinets and I couldn't see her face. I don't really know. It was true. I didn't. Though that is generally not what parents like to hear. Particularly not my parents. Particularly not my mother. Well, who are you going with? She asked. If she wasn't suspicious yet, she would be soon.
A boy from school, I said, my voice trailing off as I braced myself for the third degree. Do you want to take my car? What? Mara? I blinked. Sorry, I thought I said what? What? I asked if you wanted to take the Acura. I don't need it today, and you're off the codeine. Daniel must have held up his side of the bargain. I'd have to ask how he finagled it later. I declined to correct my mother and tell her I'd been off the codeine for days. The burn still hurt, but since Friday, it had subsided quite a bit. And under the dressings, it didn't look nearly as bad as I'd expected. The ER doctor told me I would probably scar, but my blisters already seemed to be healing. So far, so good. Thanks, Mom, but he's actually picking me up. He'll be here in... I checked the clock. Damn. 5 minutes. My mother turned and looked at me, surprised. I wish you'd give me a bit more notice, she said, as she checked a reflection in the microwave's glass surface. You look great, Mom. I'll probably just honk or something anyway. I was tempted to sneak a quick glance at myself in the microwave, too, but wasn't willing to chance who might be staring back. I poured myself a glass of orange juice and sat down at the kitchen table instead. Is Dad here? Nope, he left for the office. Why? Because that would leave one less person around to witness my coming humiliation. But before I could translate my thought into acceptable speech, Daniel sauntered in. He stretched, glancing his fingertips against the ceiling. Mother, he said, kissing Mom on the cheek as he made his way to the refrigerator. Any plans today, Mara? He asked, his head buried in the contents of the fridge. Shut up, I said, but my heart wasn't in it. Don't tease her, Daniel, my mother said. Three knocks at the front door announced Noah's arrival. Daniel and I looked at each other for a half second. Then I shot up from the kitchen table and he slammed the refrigerator door. We both bolted for the foyer. Daniel got there first. Bastard. My mother was right behind me, rubbernecking. Daniel opened the front door wide. Noah was a standing ovation in dark jeans and a white t-shirt, exuding his scruffy charm. And he was carrying flowers. My face didn't know whether to blanch or blush. Morning, Noah said, flashing a brilliant smile at the three of us. I'm Noah Shaw, he said, looking over my shoulder. He extended the bouquet of lilies to my mother, who reached past me to take it. It was stunning. Noah had good taste. It's a pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Dyer. Come on in, Noah, she gushed. And you can call me Indy. I was dying. Daniel's shoulders shook with silent laughter. Noah stepped inside and grinned at my brother. You must be Daniel? Indeed. Pleased to make your acquaintance, my brother said. It was a slow, painful death. Please sit, Noah, my mother gestured at the sofas in the living room. I'm going to put these in some water. I saw a window of opportunity and latched onto it. Actually, I think we have to... I'd love to, thanks, Noah said quickly. He was trying to hide a smile and failing, while Daniel looked like a canary-eating feline. They both walked into the living room. Daniel sat in an overstuffed armchair as Noah settled himself into one of the sofas. I stood. So, what are you doing with my little sister today? Daniel asked. I closed my eyes in defeat. I'm afraid I can't ruin the surprise, Noah said. But I promise I'll return her intact. He did not just say that. Daniel cackled, and the two of them somehow segued into a conversation. About music, I think, but I wasn't sure. I was too busy drowning in my embarrassment to pay much attention until my mother returned from the kitchen and breezed past me to sit directly across from Noah. So, Noah, where in London are you from? She asked. This morning was full of surprises. How did she know where in England he was from? I looked at my mother and stared. Soho, Noah replied. Have you been there? My mother nodded, as Joseph wandered into the living room in his pajamas. My mother lived in London before she moved to the U.S., she said. We used to go every year when I was little. She pulled Joseph onto the sofa next to her. This is my baby, by the way, she said, grinning. Noah smiled at my younger brother. Noah, he said, introducing himself. Joseph, my brother replied and held out his hand. My mother and Noah proceeded to chat like old mates about Mother England while I shifted from foot to foot, waiting for them to wrap it up. My mother stood first. It was so nice to meet you, Noah, really. You'll have to come over for dinner sometime, she said before I could stop her. I'd love to, if Mara will have me. Four pairs of eyebrows arched in expectation, waiting for my answer. Sure, sometime, I said and pushed open the door. Noah grinned unevenly. Can't wait, he said. It was an absolute pleasure, Indy. Daniel, we must talk.
And Joseph, it was wonderful to meet you.
Wait! My little brother shot up from the couch and ran to his room. He returned with his cell phone. What's your number? He asked Noah. Noah looked surprised, but he gave him it anyway.
What are you doing, Joseph? I asked.
Networking, my brother said, still concentrating on his phone.
Then he looked up, and a smile brightened his face.
Okay, got it.
My mother smiled at Noah as he followed me out of the house.
Have a good time, she called after us.
Bye, Mom, we'll be back.
Later.
Wait, Mara, my mother said, as she took a few steps out the door. Noah's eyes lifted to us, but when my mother pulled me aside, he kept walking to his car, leaving us alone. Mom held out her hand. A little round white pill was inside it.
Mom, I whispered through gritted teeth. I'd feel better if you took it.
Dr. Millard said I didn't have to, I said, glancing over at Noah. He stood next to his car and looked away.
I know, honey, but
fine, fine, I whispered and took it from her. Noah was waiting, and I did not want him to see. This was blackmail of the worst kind.
Take it now, please.
I tossed the pill in my mouth and held it under my tongue as I pretended to swallow. I opened my mouth.
Thank you,
she said, a sad smile on her face. I didn't respond and walked away. When I heard the front door close, I extracted the pill from my mouth and threw it on the ground. I hadn't decided not to take the drugs, but I didn't want to be forced.
Predate pep talk,
Noah asked as he sauntered over to open the passenger door for me. I wondered if he'd seen the pill exchange. If he did, he didn't act like it.
This isn't a date, I said.
But that was quite a performance in there. She didn't even ask what time I'd be coming home. Noah grinned.
Glad you enjoyed it.
He glanced at my clothes and nodded once.
You'll do. You're so fucking patronizing.
You have such a filthy mouth. Does it bother you? I smiled, pleased by the thought. Noah grinned and shut the door behind me.
Not in the least.
Chapter 26. I waited for Noah to light a cigarette once he started to drive. Instead, he handed me a plastic cup filled with iced coffee.
Thanks, I said a little surprised.
It looked like it had just the right amount of milk. I took a sip. And sugar.
So, how long of a drive is it?
To get wherever.
Noah lifted his own cup and extracted the straw from it with his mouth. The muscles in his jaw worked as he chewed. I couldn't tear my eyes away.
We're stopping to see a friend first, he said. A friend. It didn't sound ominous, and truly, I tried not to be paranoid. But a part of me wondered if I was being set up for something, something bigger than what Anna had planned. I swallowed hard.
Noah clicked on his iPod with one hand while he kept the other on the wheel.
Hallelujah, I said, smiling.
What?
The song.
I love this cover.
Really?
Noah looked obnoxiously surprised.
Doesn't seem like your thing.
Oh, what's my thing?
I had you pegged for a closeted pop fan.
Fight me.
If I must.
The song ended and something classical came on. I reached for the iPod.
May I?
Noah shook his head in exaggerated disappointment, but waved me on anyway.
Calm yourself. I wasn't going to change it. I just wanted to see.
I scrolled through his music. Noah had excellent but consistent taste. I was much more diverse. I smiled with satisfaction.
Noah arched an eyebrow.
What are you smirking about over there?
I'm more well-rounded than you.
Not possible. You're American, he said. And if it's true, it's only because you like crop.
How is it that you have friends, Noah?
I ask myself that daily. He chomped down on his plastic straw.
Seriously, inquiring minds want to know.
Noah's brow creased, but he stared straight ahead.
I guess I don't. Could have fooled me. That wouldn't be difficult.
That stung.
Go to hell, I said quietly.
Already there, Noah said calmly, pulling out the straw from his mouth and chucking it to the floor.
So why are you doing this? I asked. Careful to keep my voice even, but an unpleasant image of myself at a prom night soiree covered in pig's blood crept into my mind.
I want to show you something.
I turned away and looked out the window. I never knew which Noah to expect from day to day, or hell, minute to minute. Tangled overpasses wove around and above us, the hulking concrete monstrosities the only scenery on this part of I-95. We were heading south, and Noah and I didn't speak most of the way. At some point, the urban landscape gave way to ocean on both sides of the highway. It narrowed from four lanes to two, and a steep high bridge loomed in front of us. Very steep. Very high.
We climbed behind the swarm of brake lights that crawled up the overpass in front of us. My throat closed. I gripped the center console with my bandaged hand, the pain screaming under my skin as I tried not to look straight ahead or to either side, where the turquoise water and the Miami sky